Here from San Diego.
Good evening. My name is D.K. Sappington, and I am an alcoholic. I'm a real alcoholic, as defined by page 21 of our text, which means that I stand before you, a sober man only by the graces of a very loving and very forgiving God. I know that to be an absolute truth. That poor girl's in trouble, you hear me? Let me take this opportunity to welcome those who introduce themselves as new. Being a member of this fellowship to me has meant that I never, ever have to drink again. And I never have to be alone. And drunk and alone is something I knew a whole lot about before I got here. All right? Let's congratulate Marianne and Mariah on birthdays. If you'd be an alcoholic of my type, any day sober is a miracle. But to string any number of days together in a row is a gift from God. Okay? My sobriety date is November 11th, 1995. I have a sponsor. He knows that he's my sponsor. I have taken other men through the fellowship, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. Just before I moved down here to San Diego and San Francisco, I served as the co-chair for H&I, San Francisco jails, bringing meetings into the jails. I tell you all this to let you know that today I stand before you in the grip of a progressive recovery. I'm right in the middle of the boat, and that's where I have to be. Okay? Let me qualify. I don't really like talking a lot about what it was like. We kind of already know. All right. But I want to say enough about it to let you know that I drank like you. Okay? I am just like everybody else in this room. I was not really that good at being bad, if you feel me, right? I drank the required amount in a required way to be a member of this fellowship. How about that? All right, I did all the things that we as alcoholics must do to get here. Okay? All right, now, as a child, I never really fit. You know, I was that kid. I was always, if you will, a half a beat behind the music. I never really fit. I never really got it. It seemed like the rest of the world was marching to one tune, and I was marching to another. A few weeks ago, I was with my grandson and my son-in-law, and my grandson did something, as he normally does. And my son-in-law looked at him, and I looked at my son-in-law, and I said, I know that look. That was the look that my father would always have when he looked at me, that what the hell is wrong with this kid? You know, that look. I was that kid. Now, I don't know really what that means. But I hear a lot of people here in the fellowship say that as children, they really did not fit. And I was just like that. I came from the Midwest, from a middle-class family that did everything they could to see to it that I had opportunities that they did not have. There's no tales of abuse or bad things in my childhood, but still, I'm an alcoholic. One of the things that did happen to me was I moved from a neighborhood when I was in third grade where the only white people I saw were on TV. I left that neighborhood and moved to a neighborhood where everybody was white. My parents decided to move me out to the suburbs so my sister and I would have a chance at a better education. And at 8 years old, I was ill prepared to deal with not just feeling different, but being different. Okay, now I just didn't think that I was a half a beat behind. I didn't look like anybody. I didn't talk like anybody around me. I was completely different. And at 8 years old, I was ill prepared to handle that. Now, my parents used to have cocktail parties on the weekend. So it was at an early age that I equated adult entertainment with drinking. So to impress my newfound suburban chums, I drank. Now, When I drank, all my problems seemed to go away. You know? I wasn't that half a beat behind kid. I wasn't that insecure kid. I wasn't that guy that felt inferior all the time. I wasn't racked with fear of what you were thinking of me constantly. My liquor was my solution. I heard somebody speak earlier talk about partying. Let me be real clear. I did not drink to get loaded. I got loaded when I drank, but I did not drink to get loaded. I drank to function. I drank to be able to be around you. I could not handle life around other people without help. Now, I know now that was all internal, but my liquor was my solution. Life went on, and my drinking progressed. And like a bad relationship, my liquor started doing things to me instead of doing things for me. Okay? My liquor turned on me, but still I drank. We'll fast forward through this, the missed opportunities, the destroyed relationships, the divorces. We'll go right past that to what happened. I had reached a point where I knew I could not stop. You know, I think we get to that point where in our minds internally we say, you know, I cannot quit this. I cannot stop. And I've tried. I cannot stop. And I hated pain. And the thing that brought me the most pain was that look we got from our loved one's face when we had to face them once again and tell them what happened. That we wouldn't have the rent money this month because I drank it up. That there wouldn't be any Christmas this year because I drank it up. That I really didn't mean to go out for a pack of cigarettes and show up a week later. And it wouldn't happen again, even though I knew it would. That look they give you. That how could you do this to us look. That painful, cutting stare. That reminded me of how much I had hurt the people that I supposedly cared the most about. I hated that. So I did what any self-respecting alcoholic would do. I left. I got in my car and I drove to Hollywood. And I determined that since I was going to be who I was going to be, I wanted to be away from anybody that I loved. I had tried suicide on a number of different occasions, but I lacked the courage of my conviction. There was one time in a place called the Junkyard, just north of Long Beach in Wilmington. It's where crackheads go to die. Okay? I had read about this place. There was a lot of gang activity and drive-bys. So I figured if I got loaded there, somebody would do for me what I could not do for myself. And sure enough, one night I was standing on a lawn with a bunch of people, and a car came around the corner, and the windows came down. And the barrels came out, and I heard the pop, 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 pop. Everybody else dove for the ground, not me. This was my chance. This was what I was waiting for. So I stood tall. God, take me now. But he didn't. And it had the exact reverse effect that I intended. From then on out, people around there would say, you see that brother right there? Don't mess with him. That Negro is crazy. So I ended up in Hollywood. I sold my car, traded my car for some product, and I was going to go into business, okay? But as we all know, a fox can't run a butcher shop. So I ended up sleeping under the Sunset Boulevard Bridge over the 101 freeway. That was home. There's a Home Depot there now. How dare they? And I became the guy on the freeway exit ramp with the Windex and the newspaper screwing up your windshield for change. I was a squeegee man. I put a lot of time and effort into getting loaded. I would get loaded in Balboa Park in the trees because, see, the police won't climb trees. They'll just shine a flashlight up there and say, hey, you, come down. And I'd say, as soon as I finish this last blast, because if I'm going to jail, it won't be for possession. Okay? I would get loaded. I would get loaded in cemeteries. Okay? Hiding behind tombstones. Because if you're in a cemetery and somebody asks you to share what you have, you are already too loaded. So there I was, the squeegee guy. But business wasn't panning out the way I had hoped. They tell me that the steps, you know, you hear this to new people, the steps are really hard. You know what's hard? Getting loaded with no money. That's hard, okay? So I ran into some guys, criminal element they call them now, that asked me if I wanted to be the inside man. Now, I didn't know what that meant, but it sure sounded cool. So I became the inside man. Turns out the inside man's a guy that goes inside the bank to cash the forged payroll checks. So I became the inside man. It was early November. It was a Monday night. All I wanted was a six-pack of St. Pauli Girl, a hotel room to get out from under that bridge, and to watch some Monday night football. That's what my life had been reduced to. That's all I wanted. So I went to the Food for Less on the corner of Western and Sunset to cash my forged payroll check, and that's where I got pinched. The popo grabbed me up, slapped me upside the head, as they will occasionally do, and took me to the Hollywood station. And the man said, "What is your name?" And I said, "My name is D.K. Sappington." And he said, "You're going to sit right here until you're ready to talk to us." Okay. And an hour later, he came back and he said, "Your name really is D.K. Sappington, isn't it?" And I said, "Yes, it is." And he said, "Well, normally when somebody gets a fake ID made, they don't put their real name on it." And I said, "Well, you know, I'm not really a criminal. I'm a drunk and a crackhead." They took me downtown to the fraud division, and the detective sat me down and said, "It's pretty obvious you have no idea what you're doing out here. But if you tell us who put you up to this, we will see to it that you get the help that you need. Please, please, I know the rules. You do the crime, you do the time. You take responsibility for your actions, right?" Did I mention I was an alcoholic? Okay? I had never taken responsibility for anything. And I sure wasn't going to start looking at 5 years state time. I sang like Ella Fitzgerald. You hear me? I told on everybody and everything. Okay? So they threw me in L.A. County Jail. They rounded up my little band of thieves, and 3 days later, they put me out in the same neighborhood I was arrested in. It wasn't that bad. I had the "where's everybody at" look. You know what I mean? I gamed up on some money. I got some product. I got some liquor. I got some friends. And I got that hotel room. If I had known this was the last time I was going to get loaded, I'd have had a bigger party. I remember it was coming to be morning, and the sun was starting to come up. And I was out of liquor, I was out of product, I was out of friends, and soon I'd be back under that bridge like a college-educated troll. And I had that brief moment that we all must have, where we can no longer buy our own BS. This mess is not her fault, his fault, their fault, or your fault. This mess is my fault. And if I don't do something, nothing's going to change. It was not the consequences of my drinking that ran me into Alcoholics Anonymous. It was a realization that those consequences would never end. It was going to be like this until I died, and death was not going to come soon enough. That's what brought me into the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got my key deposit, little $5. I got on the bus and I went to the VA hospital in Brentwood and I begged them to let me in. Please let me in. And that's where my journey to recovery began. As I detoxed, I was introduced to the first step of Alcoholics Anonymous. And for the first time, I heard something that resonated internally. Let me share it with you. A gentleman told me, he said, "You know people who are allergic to shellfish. They go out, they eat shellfish, they swell up, they turn red, they damn near die. Okay? I'm allergic to alcohol. You put alcohol in me, I will break out in homelessness and handcuffs, I guarantee you." Okay? The difference between me and the guy allergic to shellfish is 2 weeks from now, you can't say, "Dude, Red Lobster, what do you think?" He's going to say, no. "Last time I did that, I almost died. But 2 weeks after I was drunk, face down in the gutter, you can come up to me and say, 'DK, how about a beer?' And I'll say, 'Okay.'" Because this time, baby, this time is going to be different. This time, I'm going to have a couple beers and I am going home. This time, I'm going to have a few glasses of wine and I am through. This time, I'm going to smoke that $20 rock and I'm going to bounce. Okay? But of course, that's not what happens for me. Once I drink that beer, I'm off to the races. All right? So the reality of that paradox is I've got a body that cannot handle this stuff. And I got a mind that tells me it's absolutely okay to try. And the truth of that is I'm screwed. It's going to take a miracle for me not to drink tonight. It's going to take divine intervention. That, my friends, is powerlessness. For one reason or another, I heard that. It resonated, and I understood then. And then my true journey to recovery began. I got a sponsor not because I wanted one, but because you told me to get one. See, I knew I had this thing. This alcoholism thing. I knew I had it. What I did not know is that the solution that you were offering would work for me. Voodoo steps on the wall? Are you kidding? I got real problems, all right? Okay? All the silly-ass expressions that we use around here that I still don't understand, surrender to win, really? Okay? I don't get any of that. So I knew I had this thing, but I didn't know if this stuff was going to work for me. But I made a decision to do everything I could, to do it completely, to do it honestly, to do it thoroughly, so when it failed, I could look you in the eye and say, "See, it does not work for people like me." I got a sponsor who spent most of his time laughing at me. All right, if you're new, a little diversion, if you're new, right, and you have a sponsor and he laughs at you all the time, it's not about you, homie, okay? He's laughing at you because you're saying the same stupid stuff that he used to say. And that's why my sponsor was always laughing at me, right? So we began our journey, and the second step, you know, I got to go find God, okay? Well, I grew up Southern Baptist, and the white Jesus really hadn't done a lot for me up to that point. So the whole finding God thing kind of didn't resonate with me. And Terry, my sponsor, pulled me aside, and he said, "Gee, look, you've been coming to these meetings for a little while. You've listened to all the people and their stories. They drank like you drank. They did the same silly stuff you did. And today, they're not drinking. You got two options. One, everybody's lying. Or two, you might be wrong about this spiritual solution." Which sounds more logical? I came to believe. Just that simply. I do not believe that I have to go out and find God. God is not lost. He knows exactly where he's at. It was my drunk butt that was wandering in the wilderness, you know? I just had to trust the process. Okay, so I got through the second step, and here came the solution. And I really believe the solution to my problem is the third step. First, in my text, it's broken down into three parts. All right? They give me the problem, they give me the solution, and then they give me, because I am an alcoholic, a reward for doing the solution. What am I going to get? Because I am an alcoholic, right? Okay, so the problem. The problem is me. I want what I want, and I want it now. I want some of this, most of that, half of that, and all of that. Okay? And pay attention, because I'm going to want more tomorrow. I'm going to take what you have and justify in my own mind why I deserve it more than you do. That's the problem. My selfishness and self-centeredness. I am driven and ruled by it. That's my problem. What's my solution? It's one paragraph on the bottom of page 62. Here's the how and why of it. First and foremost, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. So now I got to say, all right, what is my job and what is God's job? All right? So my job is the process. Okay? The process belongs to me, and I can take pride in my effort and diligence to the process. But the results, my friend, the results belong to God. If I am overvested in what I may get or what I should get or what I want to get, then I cannot be walking with God. I have to get out of the director's chair. It is God's seat. And if I'm sitting there, I'm leaving no room for him. This is a tough way to live for an alcoholic like myself. This is a hard way to go. To leave the results to God, to quit looking for the good and the bad in every situation, and just assume that what happens is God's will, that's a tough way to go. You're going to need a reward. What am I going to get for doing that? And it's on the top of page 63. We call them the third step promises. When we sincerely took such a position in life, remarkable things happen. Okay? All right? Everything that I need will be taken care of. As long as I meet two simple conditions, I stay close to him and I do his work well. Okay? I believe the third step prayer is a confirmation that I give to God to live this type of life. But the true third step is that decision to let God have the result. Tough stuff. Tough stuff. So I took the third step. My sponsor and I went through it. I understood it. I took it. I'm going to give this thing a shot. And I sat back to rest on my laurels. It's a big deal. Big deal. Okay? And then my sponsor pointed out that joining paragraph between step three and four, our decision was a vital and crucial step. It could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things that were blocking us. Okay? Blocking us from what? Blocking us from the sunlight of his spirit. All right? Time to do an inventory. We make such a business out of the inventories, the four-step inventory. We make such a business out of it, don't we? Okay? Let's think a minute what it is. Now, before we do that, let me just say I've taken a whole lot of fifth steps in 17-plus years, a whole lot. I can honestly say I don't remember any of that stuff. Okay, what kind of ego did I have to think that my sponsor would not only remember my nonsense, but would want to tell his chums about it? Think about that. I mean, really? Okay, so let's think about what the fourth step really is. It's a pissed off list. Well, I can do that. I can do that because I'm pissed off about everybody. So I can put everybody down on that list. Done. All right? It's a fear list. And although I don't want to let you know this, I'm afraid of everything and everybody. I'm afraid of getting too much. I'm afraid of not getting enough. I'm afraid you might know me. I'm afraid you don't want to know me. I'm afraid of everything. So the fear list is not a big deal either, huh? All right. How about the sexual inventory where I write down All the pain I've caused in personal relationships, romantic relationships, all that pain. Well, you know, that's pretty easy, too, because it's pretty much every relationship I had ever been in. So when we really think about the fourth step, it's not that big of a deal. I mean, we just write our life down. Okay? All right, so after I did my resentments, the first three columns, I was ready to start looking at this fourth column that I've been hearing about in meetings all the time. You know, you got to do the fourth column now, right? My sponsor said, stop. Let's read the book. See, before I do my fourth column, I must release those resentments. How can I look at my part if I'm still carrying that resentment? And that's why in the text, separating the fourth column from the first three columns of the resentments, there's two paragraphs that explain to me that how to release those resentments. So I got to get rid of that stuff. I mean, I can't look at my part if I'm still pissed off at you. So we release those resentments, and I put my stuff down. It was shocking what came out. All right? And then we moved on to step six. All right? Now, my sponsor made me sit in step six for a number of months. You know, he said, you can't have more months. You can't have more steps than months. That's what he used to tell me all the time. I thought it was a rule. My dumb ass, what do I know, right? But what he was doing was he's saying, you know, you got to take these steps. I don't like to use words like, I need to work my steps. If they wanted you to work them, they'd call them the 12 chores. Okay? These are steps that we take. We take to our lives. We incorporate them as part of us. And I can't do that if I'm flying through just trying to get done. I do not believe I can tell God I am willing to give up my defects of character identified in step four if I'm still using them. So now that I'm aware of them, I have to act as if. How do we do this? Well, what we did was we went into the 12 and 12, we looked at the seven deadly sins, and we equated my character defects to those seven deadly sins. And then we matched them up with the seven virtues. So where I was acting pridefully, I used to catch myself and say no, and immediately act humbly. I had a roadmap to show God I was willing to give up these defects. I can't just say, take the wheel and drive and sit in a driver's seat. I've got to be willing to give these things up. And I've got to demonstrate that willingness to God. Then we moved on. A step is important to me. Because I hear a lot of people burning their four step, you know, set it on fire, burn it up and whatnot. Well, I wanted to burn mine too. And I told my sponsor, let's burn this up like all the other people I hear in meetings do. And he said, we can't because we're going to need it again. And that's what the A step was about. A lot of the names in my four set inventory ended up on my A step inventory. I had to add some more, had to take some off, but a lot of it was already done. Okay? Now, I had a couple tough amends. First of all, I thought an amend was, damn, dude, I'm sorry. All right? Okay? I was informed that's not really what an amends is. An amends means to mend or repair. So I had a few things I didn't really want to mend or repair. My sponsor at the time used to do B&Es. For you suburbians, that means breaking and entering. And as part of his amends, he would knock on people's door and say, you don't know me, but you used to have a color console TV right back over there, and I broke in your house and took it. And for me not to get loaded today, I need to make that right. What can I do? Now, if he can take care of that nonsense, then my little CS amends I can take care of too. All right? The toughest amends I had was to the Bank of America. The absolute toughest amends I had. You see, when I was being the inside man, I was going to the bank that had my account in it. So I owed the Bank of America a lot of money. So I was 3 years in, had the money, But I didn't see any point in paying the B of A back, see, because the B of A, they had plenty of money. So I became one of those what do you think guys. We know them around the fellowship, right? Those are the guys that run around saying, what do you think, 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 what do you think? See, what I'm looking for is somebody to buy into my BS so I can do what I want to do, right? My sponsor pulled me aside and said, dude, the only reason you have the money is because you've been doing the right thing. And now that you've been doing the right thing, you don't want to do the right thing. This is what you're going to do. You're going to pay the money. And oh, by the way, shut the F up. No one wants to hear your nonsense. Yeah. So I go into the B of A. They're not going to give me a bank account. I stole from them. What am I going to get out of this? So I go in with my little cashier's check. I see the lady. My name is blah, blah, blah. And this is what I did. And need to make that right. Here's a cashier's check. There you go. And she said, thank you. No balloons fell from the ceiling. No choir sang. I walked out the door, and for the first time in my life, I felt like an adult. See, an alcoholic is like a baby. We make messes and leave them for somebody else to clean up. But grown-ups pick up after themselves. And for the first time in my life, I was taking responsibility for my actions. I can't tell you, if you're new, how much that means to an alcoholic of my type. To finally be cleaning up my messes. To be able to walk around with my head up and my conscience clear, knowing that I've got nothing on me, baby. That's a huge deal for an alcoholic of my type. All the other amends were easy compared to that giving the money. But once I did that and remembered how it made me feel, I was happy to go through the rest of the amends. About this time, a new guy shows up in my life. He was nothing like me. He would put his hand out and ask how you were doing and stay around for your answer. You know? He would care about what was going on with others. He focused not on his troubles in the meeting, but on the fifth tradition, carrying the group's message to the alcoholic who may still be suffering. He was nothing like me. I don't know exactly when he showed up. I don't know where he came from. But one morning I was looking in the mirror, and he was there. And I started to understand what you guys meant by staying for the miracle. That was my miracle. That was my miracle. I had the personality change sufficient enough to bring about recovery. We read it before every meeting. Having had a personality, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. We hear it every meeting, but do we really listen? I didn't. And it didn't really hit me until that moment. It didn't really hit me. The essence of a spiritual awakening is the awareness of a power greater than ourselves. Our more religious members call it a God consciousness. I read that somewhere. This whole thing about the bright light and the burning bush, God bless you if that's what you get. But I didn't get that. I did get the slow intellectual variety. And it snuck up on me. I didn't realize I had changed so much. Okay, here it comes. I was about 6 years sober. All right? And I had made my amends and my life was going fairly well. And my father caught the cancer. And being the overachievers that we are in my family, they gave him 6 months to live. I was in Tokyo about 3 or 4 months later. When I got that phone call. If you want to see your father alive again, you need to get home right now. And I remember flying back from Tokyo, dropping my stuff off here in San Diego, and catching another flight down to Alabama. My father wanted to die in his bed. It was a Sunday. I rushed in the house. I dropped my luggage. I kissed my mom, my sister, and I went back in the bedroom where my dad was. And my father came out of that morphine haze just long enough to be lucent. And we talked about things. We talked about the insurance. We talked about the safe deposit box. We talked about the cars. And he finally said, "And I need you to look in on your mama from time to time." This man. And I said, "Pop, I got it. I got it." And he smiled and he said, "I know you do. I know you do." This man was leaving with me the care of his most prized possession, his wife of 50-some-odd years, who he loved more than life. He was leaving her care to me. 2 days later, my father was coughing, and I was holding him in my arms in bed as he was coughing. And my daddy left me. And I was able to close his eyes, lay him down, and comfort my mother and my sister at the foot of the bed. Who is this guy? I'm the guy that runs when things get tough. But there I was, picking out the clothes for my father to be buried in. There I was, calling the relatives. There I was, working with the minister on the eulogy. There I was, calling the Navy to make sure my mama got her flag. There I was, standing up and stepping up. Where did I learn how to do that? I learned it here, in Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous has allowed me to slowly become the man I have always wanted to be, but never had the courage to be. Huge deal. And I did not see it until it happened. That was my experience. I had changed so much and did not realize it. What's it like now? Well, you know, I got some tough times, you know. Life ain't all tra-la-la recovery for this guy. You know? And I got to be reminded. I got to be reminded that it's not about being happy, okay? And I think we do a disservice to our newcomers when we tell them, come in and do what we do and you'll be happy. It's not about happy. It's about being okay when you're not. I ask God for my daily bread. Ain't nobody said a damn thing about dessert. Everything after, I'm an alcoholic who today did not drink. Everything after that is gravy. Okay? We are on and about the business of not taking a drink one day at a time. That's what we do here. That's all we do here. Feelings change. Facts do not. It is a fact that I'm an alcoholic and cannot process alcohol the way others do. That is a fact. And it remains a fact whether I feel good or bad. I am absolutely convinced that I will drink again because I'm an alcoholic and that's what we do. If I am lucky, I will die first. So the question I have to ask myself every morning is, what am I willing to do today to not take a drink? All I ever wanted was a chance. Growing up, getting sober, all I ever wanted was a chance. A chance I see other people getting that kept passing me by. Just a chance. Let me tell you, every morning I wake up, I admit, I come to believe, I make a decision. I clean house, I trust God. I reach my hand out and back for an alcoholic who still may be suffering. And as a result of doing those simple things, I get to put my head on my pillow tonight sober. And if I can do that, if I can do just that, then there's a chance that tomorrow will be better than today. Folks, this is a $1 million program. But it's being shoved up my ass a nickel at a time, okay? I'm talking slow Bridie. The key is for me to stay around here long enough today to get my 5 cent worth, baby. That's all I got coming. Okay? Nothing has happened quickly for me. And even today, 17 some odd years into this deal, nothing comes natural. The way I have to live to stay sober is not natural for me. It is an effort. And I've got to take it. If you're new, I got some good news and some bad news. All right? The good news, we have found a solution to your problem. The bad news, we're it. Embrace the horror, baby. Truth, if you're afraid of what may happen tonight, next week, next month, or even next year, that's okay. Because we will lend you our courage until you find your own. If you don't believe in God, that's absolutely fine. Believe in us. Do what we do, and your God will find you. This is a wonderful road that we have chosen to walk. Not an easy road, but a wonderful road. And dreams do come true here. All we have to do is keep our seat. My name is DK, and I am an alcoholic.